Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Brochos Daf Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Following the conclusion of our regular Daf Yomi Gemara Shiur, we will offer a supplemental Shiur covering the Tosfos of our Daf, for those who are interested. Today's shiur begins from the last of the narrow lines on Daf Ches. At the end of the line, you will see Omar, Reish Lakish. And before we begin the actual Gemara itself, let us glance at the outside margin where you will notice one of the features of the Shas Ozer, our Nosei topic headings, and we also offer Mivneh, our structural notes, as needed. In this case, our Nosei reads Totsaos. Those are the results or outcome. Lemi sheyeshlo beis knesses biro, someone who has a shul in his community. The eno nichnas sham lispalan, doesn't go into the shul for davening. Also, there will be reference to hesber arichus tocheles chayim shel toshovei bovel, an explanation of how people in Bovel achieve longevity. Our Gemara, Omar Reish Lakish, Kol mi sheyesh lo beis haknesses biro ve'eino nichnas shom lispalel, anyone who has a shul in his community and doesn't enter it for davening, nikra shachein ra. Notice you have a number one over here because there will be a number two a couple lines later, which is a second explanation of this point. So the first result is he's called a shachin ra, a wicked neighbor. Shenemar koyomar Hashem al kol shchene horoyim hanoygim benachlo asher hinchalti es ami es Yisrael. In this pasuk, there's a reference to shchene horoyim, to the wicked neighbors, in the context of the nachlo asher hinchalti es ami, would very likely be a reference to my inheritance that I have granted to my people. So our Gemara is taking this to be a reference to people that don't participate in the inheritance of Hashem, in this case the shul and the gathering together for prayer. He is considered, someone who abstains from that is considered a wicked neighbor. V'lo'oid elo shigurim golus lo'i u'levonov. In the same context as this first pasuk, it also says Shenemar. This second outcome is he causes exile to befall himself and his descendants. That is someone who doesn't enter a shul for davening. Shenemar. It says over there in the Perek Yud Beis of Yirmiyahu, Hineni Nocham Me'al Admosam. I am going. This is the, as we say, the continuation of the pasuk that began with Koyomar Hashem. He says, I am going to cast them off of their land. There's Beis Yehuda Atush Mitocham, and the house of Yehuda I will reject from amongst them. Omar Amrulei L'Rabbi Yochanan Ikos Sabi Bevel Bovel. Rabbi Yochanan was informed that there are elderly in Bovel. Tom of Yomar, Rabbi Yochanan heard this and he was wondering, doesn't it say Leman Yirbu Yemechem Vimei Benechem Alho Adomo Ksiv? And this pasuk says that there will be longevity for keeping the mitzvos if one is on the land. Alho Adom means in Eretz Yisrael. Avol B'chutz La'aretz Lo. In other words, the fulfillment of mitzvos will lead to longevity in Eretz Yisrael, but outside of Eretz Yisrael, it not so. So the response to this is Kevon the Amri Lei, when they told Rabbi Yochanan Mekatmi Umechashchi Lebei Kenishta, they go in the morning for the shachris and in the evening for the arvis to their shuls. Omar, he said, Hainu dahani lahu. This is what is benefiting them, enabling them to achieve longevity. Kirama Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi lebone. Just like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi told his sons, Kadimu v'chashichu v'aylu lebe kinishta. Go in the morning and in the evening to the shul. Ki hechi de torchu chayi. Torchu loshen arichus. So that you can achieve longevity. Omar Rabbi Acha, Rabbi Chanina, Mikra. What is the pasuk indicating that attendance to shul results in longevity? Ashrei Adam Shomea Li Lishkoid Al Dalsosai Yoim Yoim Lishmor Mezuzos Psochoi. Fortunate is the man that is a constant upon my doors every day. Uksiv Basre Ki Motzi Motzochayim. And following that, it says that those who find me will find life, longevity. So that you see an association in between those that appear within my doors, which would be a reference to the shul, and achieving longevity. Omar Rav Chisda li'olam yikones adam shnei psochim beveis hakneses. First, we give a literal translation so as to allow the Gemara to ask its question. Rav Chisda says that one should have two doors on a shul. So, Shnei Psochim Sakadaitoch, would you think that there is significance in having specifically two doors? Of what difference does it make how many doors one has? Elo Emo Shior Shnei Psochim V'achakach Yispalel. There are different explanations to this particular line, but one of them is that one should not sit and pray at the doorway of the shul, but rather enter the width of two doors width, enter the shul, and then sit down and daven there. Because davening closer to that, davening so close to the door, gives the impression that he is desperate to leave quickly. And, of course, that does not create the correct impression. Alzos yispalo kochosid elecho le'es mitzo. That is a pasuk, and we will see very shortly a series. And if you notice, to the outside margin, we have a mivneh heading where a triangle like this is featured. This is a sidra shel drushas ala pasuk li'eis mitzo, a series of explanations as to what is referenced to in this pasuk. So translated, the pasuk would mean, for this every pious one should require li'eis mitzo, for the eventual time of that one will find this. Well, what is being referred to in li'eis mitzo, the special future time that one should be praying for? Omar Rav Chanina, li'eis mitzo zu isha. That's a reference to praying for finding a proper wife. Shenema motzo isha motzo toiv. Notice the word motzo we've dashed, underlined. That corresponds to the original pasuk li'eis mitzo, similar word, indicating that mitzo is the finding of a proper wife. B'marova, in Eretz Yisrael, kinosev inish itza amrilei, when a person married, they would ask him thusly, motza o motze. These two words are essentially codes for that which the Gemara now explains. Motza, are you a motza? Dechtiv motza isha motza tov ayofek rotzon me'ashem. Have you found a proper wife, a good wife, which will result in the grace, in kindness and grace from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Motze, on the other hand, that indicates quite the contrary. Dechtiv umotze ani mar mimoves esho isha, where the pasuk describes someone finding that which is more bitter than death, and that would be a bitter wife, a bad wife that would lead to a person's bitter life. So that was what they would ask someone after they got married. Those in Eretz Yisrael would be asked motza o motze. Rabbi Nosson Omer le'eis mitzo zu Torah shenamar. Leis mitzo is a reference to Torah. It says regarding Torah. Here is a pasuk in Mishlei, and we've pointed out in the past that many, many psukim in the book of Mishlei are really references to Torah. It says ki motzi motza chayim vayofek aratzon me'ashem. So, understanding that Mishlei are psukim referring to Torah learning, you see the word motzi, which is another comparison to the original pasuk of Li'eis Mitzo, indicating the finding of Torah. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok Amar Li'eis Mitzo Zu Misa. So this is a reference to death. Shenema Lamoves Totsaos. And again, we've dashed underlined Totsaos being a word sharing a similar root as Motsa. Tanyo Nami Hochi. We have a Tanaic source that bears this out, this teaching of Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok. The source, as you can see, appears in a frame and says, "Chame ois ushloisha mine misa nivru ba'olam." There are 903 different types of death that were created. Shenema lamoves totsaos. Totsaos begematria hochi havu. The number value of the word totsaos comes out to 903. Koshe shebekulon askura. The most painful of them is a disease known as askura. Nicho shebekulon, the most pleasant of these of different forms of death is nashika, literally a kiss. Sometimes we say the kiss of death. Askura damyo kichizra bigvavo de amra de la achore nashra. Some imagery is given here in the source. And where it says that askura is like a thorn, a chizra, in a gvava d'amra, in a clump of wool. A thorn is something that is pointy at one end and widens at the other. So that if you were to, let us say, try to pull a thorn out with dilachore nashra, you pull out a thorn, let's say, pulling on its on the pointy edge, with the wide edge caught in the wool, and you try to extricate the thorn from the wool, so it will drag with it some strands of wool as well as you're pulling this out. The Rashi gives a slightly different translation. So let us glance together at the Rashi kechizra bigvava di amra de alachore nashra keanfei hasirim, which are branches of bristles and thorns hanispochim begizas ha'tzemer, that get entangled in a clump of wool kishadam nosek b'chazoka, when a person forcibly rips away the branch of a thorn branch from the wool umashlich lachor and throws it backwards she'iyav she'shalinotek ha'tzemer ima. There will be strands of wool that come along with this removed thorn branch, indicating a tearing away phenomenon, and hence the departure of the soul in the case of askura involves this tearing away feeling. V'ikar d'amri kifituri b'fi veshet. This is what's being described here is a probably something similar to a raft. A raft is made of boards or logs held together with a rope that strings together the logs, and the rope is inserted into a hole, and it's held there very very firmly. The thickness of the rope and the diameter of the hole are very close to one another, enabling them to be a very tight fit. And Rashi explains a little further, and you'll see something very interesting in the Rashi. Kefituri b'fi veshet, yom okeanus yeshbo mekoimo shenu mekabel barzel. There are different parts of the ocean where there seems to be some type of magnetic force coming from the ocean floor. And as a result, barzel, which is iron, won't be able to sail. In other words, an iron bottom boat won't be able to sail in those parts. Umechabrin luche hasfino al yedei chavolim ve'akolim. The boards of the boat are made by fastening together boards with rope. She'toichvin b'nekava v'toikin oisei b'dochak. The boards are stranded together with rope that's forced into these holes tightly. The fishheim gasim kamidas anek. If the rope is as thick as the hole. This may be something like the Bermuda Triangle, where things are absorbed into the ocean, possibly because of some kind of magnetic field. So you see the awareness of the Chazal of these things so many years ago. So the idea of a difficult death is conveyed through this analogy of the yanking out of the rope from this very tight fit. Nashika, the death called Nashika, kiss of death, is Damya Kemishchal Benisa Michabla, is like Damya Dome, is like Mishchal, the drawing out of a Benisa of a hair from milk. It's something that comes out very easily. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Lies Mitzo, notice how the triangles continue. Zukvura. This is an idea of one praying for everything to go well, including one's burial. Omar Rabbi Chanina, my craw. What is the pasuk indicating this relationship between kvura and lies mitzo? The pasuk says, "Hasmechem elai gil yosisu ki yimtzu kever." Again, kever is a grave. Yimtzu is our connection word. Omar Rabo Barav Shilo. Hainu the Amri Inchi. It is based on this that people say, "Liboy inish rachmi." A person should daven afilu ad zibula basraisa shalma, even until the last shovelful covering one's grave, that it should go well, that it should go in peace. Rashi says, "Zibula basraisa shalma shelo shalom kol yemei chayav." The person should have peace all his life. Viaf biyom kvurasa, that he should have peace even on the day that he's being buried. Ad hashlochas ofer achrona shebekisui kvurasa, until the last shovelful of dirt covering his grave. Continuing in the Gemara, Mar Zutra Omar Lies Mitzo Zu Beis Hakise. This is a reference to having a bathroom in one's immediate vicinity. Taking a look at Rashi, Lies Mitzo Zu Beis Hakise Shei Dor B'Mokom. He should live in a place Sheish Beis Hakise Somochlo, that he has a bathroom facility nearby. Because, and we have to think about a time in which indoor plumbing was not common, if it existed at all, and people would relieve themselves outdoors in the fields. The ground in Bovel was marshy. The Ein Yicholim Lachbor Shom Chafiros, and as a result, it was difficult to dig holes that would form that would serve as an outhouse. And it was not uncommon that people would have to distance themselves from their homes in order to relieve themselves and go out far out into the fields. As Rashi says, to go far away just to relieve oneself. So it would be considered a blessing to have a bathroom facility nearby. The Gemara continues, Amri b'marava, it's been said in Eretz Yisrael, Ha de marzutra adifa mikulhu. Marzutra's suggestion of having to pray to have a bathroom in one's immediate vicinity is the most significant, the best explanation of all of those that we heard. Omar le rova l'rafon bar popa. Le momor mehani mini ma'al yisah. Rafram says, Rova says to Rafram, say to us of these good things, the Amris Mishmei de Rav Chisda B'mili de Bei Kenishta, that you know in the name of Rav Chisda, you have some traditions in the name of Rav Chisda concerning shuls. So Rova is interested in hearing from Rafram things that he heard in the name of Rav Chisda regarding shuls. Omar Le, Hochi Omar Rav Chisda, so Rafram answers, thusly said Rav Chisda, My dichtiv oyev Hashem Shari Tzion Mikol Mishkenos Yankiv. That is a posuk. Oyev Hashem, Kodesh Baruch Hu loves Sheorim, those gates, meaning places, houses, buildings, Hametzuyonim Sham B'Halacha, that they study Halacha, they study Torah law there, Yoyser Mibate Knesios Umibate Midrashos, more than shuls and more than study halls. It seems from this Gemara a distinction is made between Torah study and the study of applied Torah law, which we call halacha, because Batei Midrashos were places that were that public Torah study took place in as well. So there is something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu likes even more, and those are places that are known for the study of halacha. V'hainu di Omar Rabbi Chiya bar Ami Mishmei de Ula. We have a double underline here, which is explained in the outside margin. Sidro shel meimros shel Rav Chiya bar Ami Mishmei de Ula, series of of comments made by Rav Chiya. So the first of the series we have here, where he says, "Miyon shecharav beis hamikdash," from the time of the destruction of the beis hamikdash, "Ein lo lekodesh baruch hu b'loma ela arba amos shehalocha b'vad." The only thing that remains in this world for the Almighty are the four amos in which one studies halacha. The Omar Abaye, there is a point that lasts a couple of lines here, and you'll notice the long point marking to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, the nun that's encircled with the descending vertical dashed line, indicating that these lines form a point. So Abaye says, "Meresh have garisna bego beisa umatzlino bebei kenishto." At first, I used to learn in my house, and daven, matzlino is to daven, to pray in a shul. Kevon de shemana loha de omar Reb Chiya bar Ami mishmei de Ula. Once I heard that which Reb Chiya said in the name of Ula, miyoyim shechora beis hamikdash ein lo lakodesh baruch hu b'loma lo arba amos shalocha b'lvad. From the time of the destruction of the beis hamikdash, HaKodesh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, has only the four amos of halocha alone. Lo havi matzlino elo hecha de garisna. I would no longer daven in any place other than the place that I would, that I studied Torah. Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Asi, afagav dehavulu tleisar beknishto b'Tveria, even though they had under their jurisdiction 13 shuls in the city of Tveria, lo matzlu elobeni amudi hecho dehavu garsi. They davened in the only place they davened was between the pillars where they studied. V'Omar Rabbi Chiya bar Ami mishmei deula. Godol hanene miyagio kapov yoiser miyore shemayim. Greater is the one who benefits from income that he produces through his expenditure of efforts, than one who is God fearing, without expending efforts in pursuing income. Deilu gabi yore shemayim, with regard to someone who is God fearing. We'll say God-fearing alone. Ksiv Ashrei Ish Yorei Es Hashem. Fortunate is the man who is God-fearing. V'ilu Gabi Nene Miyigio, regarding one who also benefits from his expended efforts in achieving an income, Ksiv Yigia Kapecha Ki Sochal Ashrecha V'toiv Loch. So you see two expressions, Ashrecha and Tov Loch. Ashrecha V'lom Azeh. Fortunate are you in this world that you are not dependent on others, and v'tov loch li'olam haba, and you will benefit in the world to come as well. Ulegabi yorei shemayim v'tov loch lo ksiv bei, regarding someone who is God fearing and apparently without the expenditure of effort in order to achieve an income, it doesn't say v'tov loch. You only see the expression of ashrei. V'omar Reb Chiya bar Ami mishmei deula le'olam yodur odom b'mokim rabo. A person should strive to dwell in a place where his teacher is. Shekolzman shishimi ben Gero kayom, as long as Shimi ben Gero was alive, lo nosa shlomo es bas paro. Shimi ben Gero being associated with the serving as a teacher of Shlomo. So Shlomo Melech, as long as his Rebbe was alive, He didn't marry the daughter of Paro. That marriage is something that was not looked upon by the Chazal in a positive light. So he didn't engage in that. He didn't enter that matrimony as long as his Rebbe was alive. The Hotanya Al Yador, but we have a Tanaic source that says one should not live where his Rav is. Loi Kashya. There is no contradiction between this Tanaic source and that which Reb Chiya is teaching. Ha de kayefle, ha de lo kayefle. If he subordinates himself to his Rav and accepts his Rav's rulings and at times chastisement, then good, then he should live in the vicinity of his Rav. If he, however, is called a low kaifle, if he is not subordinate and doesn't accept his Rav's chastisement, then better for him not to live in the vicinity of his Rav. As Rashi says, since he will not accept his tochachos, if he were to be in the vicinity, he would then be aware of his wrongdoing. Therefore, better to be in a place where he won't hear any chastisements, means that he wouldn't accept the criticism anyway, and he'd be considered a shogeg and not mazid. If he then commits wrong, then he'll at least be doing so inadvertently and not with awareness. Omar Rav Huna bar Yehuda, Omar Rav Menachem Omar Rav Ami, Maidichti v'oizvei Hashem yichalu. Those that abandon HaKodesh Baruch Hu will be eliminated. Zeh HaMeiniach Sefer Torah k'shu pasuach v'yotzei. This is a reference to someone who leaves a Sefer Torah while it is open. Ostensibly, a reference to someone who, while they are reading from the Torah in a shul, he just leaves in the middle of the Torah reading while the Torah is open. Rabbi Avo, Nofik Ben Gavra LeGavra. Rabbi Avo, when he needed to leave a shul during the Kriyas HaTorah, he would leave between Aliyos. People would be called up to the Torah in different sections of the Torah reading. So at that point, the Torah reading was stopped, and it's very likely that the Torah scroll was closed during the change of people for their respective aliyos, and that was a good time to leave if necessary. Boy Rav Popo, Ben Psuka Lepsuka Mahu. What is the halacha about leaving between individual verses? And it should be noted that the idea of between individual verses had prominence in the time, or in those places even today, where they practice the recitation or the reading of the Targum. The Targum is the Aramaic explanation of psukim. In many, many chumashim, you have a Targum Unkelus that accompanies the Hebrew text of the Torah. And between, as a pasuk was being read, immediately following a pasuk or a targum would be recited. So that's not the actual Torah reading; it's the targum translation explanation that is being read. Is that an acceptable time to leave the shul? Teku. So that remains unresolved. Rav Sheshes Mahader Ape Vigoris. Rav Sheshes, who it might be noted that he was blind, he would turn away from the rest of the people and learn while Kriyas HaTorah was taking place. There is much more explanation on this, and Amir Tzashem, for those who are interested, we will get to that in our Tosfos Shiur, which follows our regular Gemara Shiur. And of course, there is further room for research into Rav Sheshes' practice by looking at the Rishonim. We recommend looking at the Rabbeinu Yonah. So Rav Sheshes, as far as the Gemara is concerned, says here, it says regarding him, he would turn around and pursue his own personal Torah study. Omar, and he would claim Anan Bedidon the Inhu Bedidu. Anan means us, in Bedidon, in our thing. I am learning my Torah. I am learning my own Torah learning. And Inhu, the people in Shul, they, Bedidu, are doing their thing. They are listening to the Kriyas HaTorah. Before continuing, we have a topic heading in the outside margin, the Nosei, and this is entitled Shnayim Mikra V'Echod Targum. This is a reference to the practice of learning or reading the Torah portion on a personal level two times, and one time reading, in addition to the two readings of the Torah, one would then read the Targum of that Torah portion, so that every week, preferably before Shabbos, everyone would read the Torah before the Shabbos Torah reading in Shul on Shabbos morning. One would complete a reading of the Torah twice, including the Targum. The Gemara, Omar Huna Bar Yehuda, Omar Rabbi Ami, Le'olam Yashlim Odom Parshiyosov Im Hatzibur. A person should always make sure to complete the Torah portions together with the community, with the public. Shnaya Mikra, the Echo, the Targum, two times reading the Mikra, and one time reading the Targum. The Afilu, Atreis v'divan, even reading psukim that have name places in it, like this pasuk, Atreis and Divan. Rashi on this says, She'ein bo targum. There is no targum on this. And what then is the result? So on a simple level, it would mean that you should read this pasuk in effect three times. But there is more to say on this topic, and this too will be dealt with by the Tosfos, as well as other Rishonim, and the Mirtz Hashem, during our Tosfos Shiur, we will be able to get into that. Continuing in the Gemara, we're telling you how important it is to do this, to fulfill this Shnayim Mikra V'Yechad Targum, Shikol HaMashlim Parshiyos V'Imat Tzibur, he who completes the Torah reading by Shabbos, when the Tzibur reads it, Ma'arichin lo yomov ushnosav, he merits longevity. Rav Bevai Bar Abaye, Sovar, now before we go on in the Gemara, we want to take note of this marking. You have a diamond with a colored in tip on the outside margin, the Nosei, Hemshech, meaning continuation of the topic, with the Mivneh, structural note, and that's a reference to this diamond. The word Sovar appears enclosed in this diamond. Have Amino Shonos, different thoughts. Eich L'Kayim HaShlomas Kriyas Parshios HaTorah. How to fulfill this idea of completing the Parshios of the Torah. We will see different ideas in the Gemara, but they will be rejected. So we go on. Rav Bevai Bar Abaye, on the third line of the Gemara, Savar, he thought, he considered L'Ashlominu L'Parshiyaisa D'Kula Shosa, to read all of the Torah portions of a year, of a given year, B'Male Yom HaKippuri, on Erev Yom Kippur. So his idea was to sit on Erev Yom Kippur, the ninth of Tishrei, and the ninth day of the month of Tishrei, and sit and learn and read all of the Torah, that year's Torah portions. Tono Le Chio Barav Midifti. So Chio Barav teaches a source to Rav Bevai, indicating not to do that. Ksiv, this source deals with Yom Kippur, specifically the ninth day of Tishrei, which is Erev Yom Kippur. And it says in the Torah, V'inisem es nafsho sechem v'tisha l'choydish bo erev. And you shall, inisem is an expression that is associated with, literally is afflict yourself, but it's a reference to fasting. So it says in this pasuk that you shall fast on the ninth of the month, ninth of Tishrei Ba'erev. V'chi b'tisha misanin, is it so that we fast on the ninth? V'alo ba'asara misanin. Everyone knows that the tenth of Tishrei is the day of Yom Kippur, so it's on the tenth that we fast. What does the pasuk mean when it says you shall fast on the ninth of the month? Elo marloch, it conveys the following idea. Kol ha'echa v'sheisa b'chi, he who eats and drinks on Erev Yom Kippur on the ninth, he is considered as if he fasted on the 9th and the 10th. Would be something considered very praiseworthy, and as Tosfos says, if he were commanded to have fasted on those two, so his eating and drinking is as if he fasted on the 9th as well. Of course, we're not commanded to fast on the 9th of Tishrei, but it's this idea of this fulfillment of eating and drinking on the 9th is considered as great an accomplishment as the fasting that we do on the 10th. The point is that since a person has to fulfill the eating and drinking on the ninth, he's not going to be able to be preoccupied with reading all of that year's parshios on the ninth. Okay, so upon hearing that, Savar Lak Du Minhu, he figured he will read the parshios early. So we look at Rashi, Lak Du Minhu, L'seder Kol HaParshios B'Shabbos Achas O B'Shtei Shabbosos. That he would cluster together over one or two Shabbosos all of the year's Torah portions. In other words, not do it on the ninth. He already was told not to do it on the ninth of Tishrei, but during some other Shabbos, cluster together lots and lots of Torah portions on one or two Shabbosos, and thereby fulfill Shnayim Mikra via Chatargum? Well, this too is rejected. Omar Le Hahu Sabo, an elderly man, says to Rav Bevai, Tanino, we have a Tanaic source that says, Ubilvad Shelo Yaktim Vishlo Yachir. The fulfillment of Shnayim Mikra Vechot Targum is one to be fulfilled not too early and not too late. Kedama Le Rabbi Shua Ben Levi Livune. Just like Rabbi Shua Ben Levi tells his sons, Ashlimu Parshiyosaihu Im Hatzibur. And the emphasis, and you can see with our markings, is Im Hatzibur, together with the public, Shnayim Mikra V'Yechot Targum. That means you should have your fulfillment of Shnayim Mikra V'Yechot Targum coinciding with the public. And as such, the public reads a given Torah portion every week. So too, your fulfillment of Shnayim Mikra V'Yechot Targum shall be every week, not clustered in one or two Shabboses. He goes on, Rav Shulman Levi goes on with some additional points, and we have them numbered, as you can see, a 2 and 3 follow. by the way, the Hahu Sabo, we translated as an elderly man, because that's a literal translation, but there are commentaries that say it's a reference to a specific individual, possibly Eliyahu HaNavi, but we provided a simple literal translation. Continuing in the Gemara, V'hizaru bevridin k'Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi told his sons, also be careful with regard to the slaughtering of a bird to make sure that you cut its neck arteries as well while doing the slaughtering. That will ensure maximum blood release from the bird. It goes without saying that Torah law prohibits the consumption of blood of those animals whose meat we eat, namely animals and birds, to the exclusion, of course, of fish. But the Torah prohibits the consumption of blood of birds. And Rashi explains that birds, as opposed to animals, birds were very often, they're small creatures, and they were roasted whole, as opposed to animals that are dismembered into different cuts of meat, thereby ensuring a total blood release when you're roasting something whole, so you don't have that same level of assuredness. Therefore, while slaughtering it, make sure its neck arteries are cut, thereby ensuring maximum release of blood in anticipation of the bird then being roasted whole. And this care is Kirebi Huda, based on the teaching of Rabbi Yehuda, the Snan that you find in this Tanaic source, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ad Shishchot Esavridim. He says that Shechita of an oaf is not properly accomplished until you sever its neck arteries as well. A third point, Hivizaru Bezokin Sheshochach Tamudo Machmas Onso. Be careful and show proper respect to a Torah sage that has forgotten his Torah learning as a result of something beyond his control. Certain types of senility or Alzheimer's can afflict someone who was in his prime a Torah scholar, and at this point, because of something beyond his control, he has forgotten his Torah learning. Nevertheless, that is no reason to diminish your level of respect. The Amrinon, there is, we say, Luchos v'Shivrei Luchos Munochos Ba'aron. In addition to the two tablets of the Ten Commandments that Moshe Rabbeinu chiseled himself, that are placed in the Holy Ark, in the Aron HaBris, the broken first set of Luchos, the smashed Luchos that Moshe Rabbeinu originally brought down from Har Sinai, those pieces are also gathered together and stored in the Aron, so that the broken pieces are similar, or the analogy to the Torah sage that has forgotten his Torah learning, and yet they are accorded the same level of honor and respect. Omru le Rova lebone. Rova told his sons. We should have noted a little earlier, but there is a double underline and Roman numeral numbering that accompanies this Gemara on the outside margin under our Mivneh. We had noted these are Tzavos Rabbonim Livnehem, different types of commands or instructions that Torah scholars leave to their sons. So we saw Rav Shua ben Levi, and now we see Rava's instructions to his sons. And we also have a numbering scheme that accompanies this. We're going to be using letters for each new commandment, and there will be numbers shortly coming up for two versions of something. So the first instruction is Kishatem Chuitchim Bosar, when you cut meat, Al Tachtachu Al Gav Hayad. Don't cut it on your hands. Don't cut the meat while you're supporting the meat on your hand. Iko Diamri Mishum Sakona. Some explain this as a result of danger, that while that you shouldn't jab your hand while you're cutting meat if you were keeping it on your hand while cutting it. The Iko Diamri Mishum Kilkul Seuda. Another explanation is it will ruin the meal. What does that mean? So Rashi says, Mishum Kilkul Seuda Af B'chaburuk Tana Yetze Dam, even with a small nick, blood will flow from the person's hand. The Alachlech Es Hamaychol, and it will dirty the food. The Amin Es Hamasubin, and be disgusting to those that are eating. So as to prevent people from being disgusted, don't cut the meat or possibly the food while you're holding it in your hand. Another instruction, the Al Teshvu Al Mitas Aramis. This will be explained later in the Gemara. Literally, don't sit on the bed of a heathen woman. The Al Ta'avru Achore Beis HaKnesses Bishol Shatzibur Mispalin, and don't pass in back of a shul while the community is davening. And now we explain the Bay's point. That's the second point, the explanation. The Al Teishvu Amitas Aramis. Why not? So here we have Lo Iko Diamri Lo Signu Below Kriyashma. Don't go to sleep without saying Kriya Shema. In other words, just like a heathen, or let's say as opposed to a heathen who, when he goes to sleep, he gets tired, just plops into bed and goes to sleep. You, before going to sleep, should recite the Kriya Shema, hence the expression of don't go into the bed as a heathen. As a heathen who goes to bed without a Kriya Shema, you go to bed saying the Kriya Shema. The Ikal the Amri, another version, is Al Delo Tinasfu Giorto. Do not marry a convert woman. The Ikal Diamri Aramis Mamish. Literally, the bed of a heathen woman. Do not sit on her bed. Umishum Maise the Rav Papa. And that's because of an incident involving Rav Papa. You'll notice we have a bracketed section, and our note indicates the inside margin where the star is Besocha Sagram Gemora Mefaretes Ma Hoysa Maise the Rav Papa. The Gemara will explain what happened in that incident. After the brackets, you'll notice we continue with our original lettering or numbering, whereby we will deal with Gimel, the third point that was mentioned above, of not passing in front or in back of a shul while the community is davening in there. So being aware of the structure, we continue in the Gemara with the story of Rav Papa. The third explanation of Rava's instruction concerning Al Teishvu Amitas Aramis, don't sit on the bed and of a heathen woman, we're taking this literally, and because of an incident involving Rav Papa. The Rav Papa Ozal Legabi Aramis. Rav Papa had a reason to visit a heathen woman. Hotsia Lo Mita Omra Lo Shev. She offered him a bed to sit on. Omar lo eini yoshev, I'm not going to sit down ad shetagbi esamita, until you lift up the bed. I want to see what's under the mattress. Higbia esamita, she raised the bed. Umatsu sham tinok meis, and lo and behold, there was a dead child. As is clearly apparent, this was what we would call an attempted blood libel. The Rashi explains, Maisid Rav Papa Shomer Lo Shev Al Amita V'No Meis. Rashi adds, it was her own son that was dead, Mutal Alea, that was lying there. V'Hoisa Roitzi La'ali Olav, she wanted to libel him, V'Lomar Shiyoshav Olav V'Horgo, that he sat on the bed with the child under it and thereby killed the kid. You might want to look for further reference into the into the Rabbeinu Nisim Gon, which is found on the outside margin of your Gemara, and you'll see he elaborates on this particular incident. We continue in the Gemara. The Al Tavru Achorei Beis Hakneses B'Shosh Shatzibur Mispam, the third instruction that Rava gave to his sons, don't pass in back of a shul when the community is davening. Messiah the Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. This supports Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's idea of the Omer Yeshua ben Levi. Also, lo l'odom shiavor achorei beis hakneses b'shal shatzibur mispalin. It is forbidden to pass behind a shul when the community is davening. So, on a at first glance, this would appear to be that one who everyone is davening and you're not there, you seem to be a type of denier. A heretic, if you will, and that doesn't want to join together with the community while they are davening. So this is now qualified, though, this prohibition of passing behind the shul, which, of course, what we just said is the appearance of a heretic. It doesn't mean that someone who actually is walking behind the shul is necessarily a heretic. So Rav Shulman Levi says, so as to avoid this wrong impression, don't pass behind the shul when the public is davening inside. However, even that is qualified. Omar Abai, Velo Amoron, and you have the series of triangles that are here to show all of the qualifications. Velo Amoron, Elo Deleko Pischa Achrino. The prohibition of passing behind a shul is where there's only one doorway to the shul. Aval Iko Pischa Achrino, Les Lanvo. If the shul has another doorway, say on another side of the building, so people see you walking past this doorway, they won't come to the conclusion that you're a heretic. They'll figure you're going to walk in through the other door. V'lo amoron el deleko bei kinishto achrino. And likewise, we're talking about a community that has only one shul in it. Aval iko bei kinishto achrino. If it's a community that has another shul, another synagogue in it, less lanbo, then we won't object to your passing by this particular shul while they are davening. People will understand that. Will reason, will figure you're probably going to daven in the other synagogue. V'lo amoron ela delo dori tuna v'lo rohit v'lo monach tfilin. Likewise, the restriction, the warning of Rabbi Shulam Levi will not apply unless you are, the person is not carrying something, carrying a tuna as a burden, or he is not running. If a person is running, it won't apply, the restriction won't apply, because people will figure that his lack of entrance to shul is because he's in a rush to accomplish something else, but not a result of rejection or heresy. And v'lo, or someone who is not wearing tefillin. Namely, the objection applies to only in the case of someone who is not wearing tefillin. Aval iko chad mehanoch les lanbo. If you have one of these things whereby a person is carrying a package, so people will associate his lack of entrance because of something having to do with the package that he has to deliver, or he is, if he's running, as we explained already, people will assume he's rushing to something, and again, lack of entrance is not a result of some type of religious rejection. And similarly, if he's wearing tefillin, then people understand he is not a heretic, he's a believing Jew, as is manifest by the fact that he wears tefillin. And only if you're lacking all of these elements, then we would have an objection. Tanya, we have a Tanaic source in which a new marking is featured. You notice the trapezoid shape. On the outside margin under our Nosei Mivneh heading, we feature a trapezoid, a volcano shape, under which we've written B'shloisha Dvorim. We have sources, two sources that have this expression at three. It says three things. Rabbi Akiva and Rav Gamliel. These sources will feature these two Tanoim. The first source featuring Rabbi Akiva, and then the second featuring Rav Gamliel. In three areas, these Rabbonin are Meshabchin. They praise Modayim, Parsai Modayim, people from Modai, a nation, and Poras, another nation. So we now continue in the Gemara. Tanya, Omar, Rabbi Akiva, B'shloisha Dvorim, Oyev, Ani, Esa, Modayim. With regard to three practices, I like the Modai people. Number one, Kishechotchen es habosar ein chotchen elo al gabi hashulchan. When they cut meat, they cut only on a table surface. This, of course, is in contrast or as opposed to cutting while holding it on one's hand. Kishen Nushkin, when they kiss, Ein Nushkin Elo Al Gav Hayah, they kiss on the back of the other one's hand. Rashi says Al Gav Hayah Es Yad Chavero Hu Noshek. And skipping the little bracketed section, Mipnei Harok, they would kiss on the hand because of, as opposed to, let's say, kissing on one's the other one's lips or face because of the saliva, which would be disgusting. So we also, Rashi adds, V'derech Hashivus Huzeh, that's considered a sign of importance, this type of kissing on hand. The third point that I admire concerning the Modayim is Kishiyotzim, when they counsel one another, Ein Yoatzim Ela Basodeh. They counsel one another, which often involves matters of privacy. They do that out in the fields. Rashi uses a very interesting expression. She's the Amri Inchi, people say Oznaim Lekosel, and in English we have the expression that is the same as what Rashi is saying: the walls have ears. So that if you have matters of privacy, you're advised to do so in some type of isolated location, and in this case, isolated outdoors where no one is going to hear you. Omar Rav Ado Bar Abba, my crawl. What is the pasuk that reflects this third point? Vayishlach Yankov Vayikro L'Rochel L'Leo Hasodeh El Tzona. When Yankov wanted to discuss a matter of urgency that required secrecy, he summoned his wives Rochel and Leah to the field. And hence what we said here, that matters of privacy should be discussed only in an outlying and private area. Tanya, we have another Tanaic source. Amar Rabban Gamliel, B'shloisha dvorim ohev ani es ha-parsayim. In three areas I admire the Persians. Hein tznuin v'achilosan, they exercise modesty in their food consumption. Utznuin v'veis hakisei, likewise they show modesty in the bathroom. Utznuin v'dover achir, and likewise when conducting intimacy. Ani tzivisi l'mekudoshai, this posuk is a reference to the downfall of Bovel. And the posuk says, I commanded my Mekudoshai. We'll see later, this has to do with my appointed ones. Rashi explains, with regard to the downfall of Bavel, and it would happen to be the Persian Empire that defeated Bavel, the Pasuk says, I commanded the kings of Poras to come and destroy Bavel. They are referred to, the kings of Poras are referred to, the Persian Empire, Persian monarchy is referred to as my Mekudoshai. Tani Rav Yosef, Elu HaParsayim, this pasuk is a reference to the Persians, the Persian Empire, HaMekudoshim UMezumonim LeGehenim, that they are eventually themselves going to end up in purgatory. So the word Mekudoshai, as opposed to the common translation as the holy ones, it is a reference to the specified ones, the designated ones, and Rav Yosef says they are specified and designated eventually to going to purgatory. So in the meantime, though, they were appointed to destroy Bavel. Rabban Gamliel Omer Ad Shiala Mud HaShachar. This goes back to the Mishnah on Daf Beis, where Rabban Gamliel mentioned that the final time for the recitation of the evening Kriya Shema is until dawn. Before we go further in the Gemara, we have a structural note and topic heading that you'll see in the outside margin the Nosei Mivneh. We have a number 1 and a number 2 that appear in a house shape. These represent Shnei Brisos. One is Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, and the second one is Reb Shimon Bar Yochai quoting in B'Shem Rabbi Akiva. The house form will be used in the Gemara text around the expression Shtei Pa'omim. Hagdoras Pirkei Hazman Shel, we're going to give a time definition for one, Aleph, Kodem Ulachar Alos. The recitation in this case, in our discussion, will be the recitation of Kriya Shema before and after dawn. Imagine there's a specific point in time called dawn, and we'll discuss the recitation of Kriya Shema before dawn and after dawn. Likewise, Kirem Ulachar Nates. The second brisa will deal with before and after sunrise. Now, Heora, there is a point we want to emphasize. Yesh Lizkor, one should remember the Zmane Kriyashma, that the time of Kriyashma recitation, Tluyum Bishchivu Bekima, depends on the concept of sleep and arousing. Velo Beyoim Velaila, and is not a function of simple definition of day and night, but rather time of sleep and time of arising. Following each one of these Tanaic sources, we're going to see an expression that we've highlighted with a dot underline, ha gufa kashya. B'shnei ha-braisos yu stiros penimios b'hagdoras hazman kiyoim olaila. There will be an internal, a seeming internal contradiction regarding these sources as to their definition of day and night. Our hope that one will not be confused, but there are two points that we've already mentioned, and they are Shiva Kima and Yom Valaila. Another marking that will appear is a marking emphasizing the name Rav Acha Bar Chanina. A double underline with dots in it will emphasize his name. Now this discussion continues to the first few lines, the first five lines of first four lines of Tes Amud Aleph. The Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Halacha Kerabban Gamliel. Rav Yehuda rules like Shmuel that the time of Kriyashma Shel Arvis lasts until dawn. Tanya, a Tanaic source. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochoi Omer Pe'omim Shalom Kori Kriyashma Shtei Pomim Balayah. There, at times a person could in effect read the Kriyashma twice at night. Echad Kriyim Shalom Rashachar Ve'achas Lachar Shalom Rashachar. One of them before dawn, the other after dawn. The Yotze Bohen Yedei Chovaso Achas Shel Yoim Ve'achas Shel Laila. And through this double reading, one before dawn and one after dawn, he fulfills the kriyashma of the daytime and the kriyashma of the previous night. Ha gufa kashya, there is an internal contradiction with regard to this source. Amris, you said, pa'omim shalom kori kriyashma shtei pa'omim balayla. There are times a person reads kriyashma twice at night, and that twice at night included before and after dawn. Alma, you see from this. This word Alma appears in a diamond so as to emphasize the conclusion, the seeming conclusion, that is. Alma, li'achar shi'alam u'rashachar, lailahu. This source had said that you're going to be reading Kriyashma twice at night, and that twice included before and after dawn, so that after dawn equals Lailahu. It's categorized as night. V'hodar Tani, and then it said in the source, Yoytse bohen yedei chayvaso, achas shel yoim v'achas shel laila, that those two readings enable you to fulfill your requirement of day as well as night. So that achar amud hashachar time period is here referred to as yoim. So Alma Yamamahu. So with this, it would then be come out that after dawn is really called day. Just going over these two diamonds, the first diamond showed us that after dawn is considered night, and here you have after dawn considered day. The Gemara says, Loi. Don't conclude like that. Rather, Li'olom Lailahu. The period of time called, the point in time called after dawn is really considered nighttime. It's night until sunrise. The ha de kori le yom, that which the term yom is applied to after dawn, is de iko inshi de kaimi bahi shaita. It's a time during which people do arise from sleep. So with regard to kriyashma, where the morning kriyashma is defined by uvikumecha, upon your arising, so that even though after dawn is called night, namely, night would extend until sunrise, and this is pre-sunrise, therefore it's called night. However, technically speaking, you can fulfill your daytime Kriyat Shema recitation because it is a time that people do arise from sleep. Omer of Acha Bar Chanina, Omer of Yeshua ben Levi, Halacha Rabbi Shimon ben Yochoi. So he rules like Rabbi Shimon ben Yochoi, enabling a person to fulfill his Kriyat Shema requirement of the daytime immediately after dawn. Iko demasni lahod de Rav Acha Bar Chanina aho de Sanya. In another version, this is our second version, has Rav Acha Bar Chanina applying to the following Tanaic source. De Sanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochoi Omer Mishum Rabbi Akiva. In this case, you have Rabbi Shimon bar Yochoi quoting Rabbi Akiva. Pe'omim shadim kori kriyashma shtei pe'omim bayom achas kodem hanetz hachama v'achar li'achar hanetz hachama. One reading before sunrise and the other after sunrise. V'yotze bohen yedei chavoso, and he thereby fulfills his requirements. Achas shel yom v'achas shel laila. One of the daytime kriyashma, the other of the evening, the previous evening kriyashma. Looking upon the source, we have a very, very similar Gemara structure to that which we had just before. Hence, this is a second version. It says, Ha gufa kashya, this source presents an inherent contradiction. Amris, you said on the one hand, Pa'omim shalom kori kriyashma shtei pa'omim bayom. One of them before sunrise, the after sunrise, one after sunrise. And we therefore see from here, Alma, you see from this, Kodem honetz hachama yomamahu. The time period right before sunrise is called day. As the source said, you're going to one of them, you're fulfilling, you're saying Kriyat Shema twice, two times, bayom. And one of those two times happened to be before sunrise. So that before sunrise is a point in time which equals yomamahu, daytime. V'hadar tani, and then you say, yoytze ben yedei chavoso, you thereby fulfill your requirement, achas shel yom v'achas shel laila. One of these two is a fulfillment of the nighttime Kriyat Shema. Alma lailahu, so that point in time called before Neitz Hachama, pre-sunrise, is in fact categorized as night. So you have a contradiction. Focusing on that point in time pre-sunrise, at the beginning it sounded like pre-sunrise was called yom, and now pre-sunrise is called night. Loi. Don't conclude thusly. Le'olam yomamahu. We're now at the very top of Daf Tes Amud Aleph. Reading again from the beginning of the line. Loi. Le'olam yomamahu. This point in time called pre-sunrise is really, yes, it's called daytime. V'hai dekoru le'laila, that which there was a reference to it being called night. De'iko inshi degonu bahi shaita. People are still sleeping at that time. So pre-sunrise is a point in time one could fulfill his nighttime Kriyat Shema requirement, not because it's called night, but rather because it's called u'beshachbecha, a time where people are still in slumber. Omer Rabbi Acha, Rabbi Chanina, Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Halacha k'Rabbi Shimon, Shomar Mishum Rabbi Akiva. Halacha shall follow this source. And in this source we see one reading Kriyat Shema before sunrise and fulfilling his nighttime Kriyat Shema requirement. Omar Rabbi Zera, Ubilvad Shelo Yoimar Hashkivenu. Without committing ourselves to different opinions, we have on this line a Machlokas Rashi and Toisus. We'll simply translate that which Rabbi Zera says, that though we rule like the Tanaic source, one should not recite the Hashkivenu. Since our Gemara Shir is based on the Rashi explanation, we look at Rashi and says on the second line from the top, Uvachil Yomar Hashkivenu, Hakori Kriyashma Shel Laila Shachris Somuch Lamud Hashachar, one who is going to recite the nighttime Kriyashma close to morning, right before dawn, Lo Yomar Hashkivenu. He should not recite that last paragraph, the final brocha of the Birchas Kriyat Shema, that's associated with the nighttime Kriyat Shema, Hashkivenu. Why not? She'ein oid zman tchilas shchiva. It's not the time. That pre-dawn moment is not the time of the beginning of sleep. It's not the time people are going to sleep or the beginning of their sleep. Elo sof shchiva. It is the time that is the end of their sleep. So hashkivenu is a prayer to God, enable us to go to sleep. That moment called pre-dawn is not a time that's appropriate to say we are going to sleep. Hence, according to Rashi, this comment of Rabbi Zera in effect jumps back to the first of the two sources that we just learned, and Rabbi Zera's ruling then is not coming on the heels of that which was stated just before, but rather jumping back to the first source which spoke about a two-time Kriya Shema recitation, one of which was right before dawn, and on that, Rabbi Zera was saying, in that case, when you are saying the nighttime Kriya Shema right before dawn, don't add the bracha of Hashkivenu. Regarding this, Tosfos will disagree, and Amir Tzashem, for those who are interested, you can learn together with us the Tosfos Shiur. However, this concludes today's Gemara section. For those who are interested, there follows a Shiur on today's Tosfos. Let us turn now to Daf Ches Omed Aleph, Tosfos at the top, Rav Sheshis Mahade Ape Begoras. We learned in our Gemara that Rav Sheshis, during the Kriyas HaTorah, after the Gemara had mentioned that it's a reprehensible act to leave during the Kriyas HaTorah in leave shul, Rav Sheshis had this practice of continuing his personal Torah learning while the Torah was being read. He simply turned around facing a direction other than everyone else and continued his personal Torah learning. The Tosfos, Rav Sheshis Mahadir Ape Begores, the Im Toimar, you might ask, V'ho'an Rinon B'Soito, it's said in Maseches Soito, Mai Dichtiv, where the Gemara asks, that which is written, what is meant by Uchefischoi Omdu Kol Ha'om? The Gemara elaborates on that and says, Kevon Sheniftach Sefer Torah, once a Sefer Torah is opened, Osir L'Sapir Afilu B'Dvar Halacha, it is forbidden to converse even in matters of halacha. Well, if that be the case, Rav Sheshis, how is it possible that he was continuing his own Torah learning while the Sefer Torah was being read from in shul? V'yesh loymar, hosom ayri b'koil rum. The prohibition mentioned in Maseches Soto is an audible conversation concerning halacha. Kedei shelo yivatlu koil kriyas haTorah, so as to not void or counter the voice of the Torah reading. So as to make sure the Torah reading would be heard, the Gemara in Sota is saying one should not conduct an audible discussion concerning something else. The Hocha, with regard to Rav Sheshis, Airi Benachas, we're talking about something done quietly. The high deko mahader ape, this practice of his to turn his back, Rabusa mashma, there is a chidush in this. The afagav de mahader ape, even though he is turning his back, turning away, shenire, giving us the impression, kemei niach sefer Torah, as one who is leaving behind a sefer Torah, and we already saw in the Gemara that one is warned against leaving a Sefer Torah. So even though the turning of his back gives that impression, Shapir Domi, it's okay. There's one thing called an impression of leaving the Torah, and there's another thing that's an actual leaving of the Torah. So the actual leaving, that is what is warned against. However, turning one's back is not a problem. Bahai dahader ape, so why did he turn in the first place? Kadeshi having yursosa, so he should be able to concentrate more effectively. Rav Alphys Kosav, the Rif writes, the halochas gedolos meforshi, davko shiyesham asoro achrini, oz yochol lumod.
the permission for Rav Sheshes to continue his own personal learning is where there are 10 others that are listening to the Torah reading. Aval ein shom asora ki im imo, if there aren't 10 unless you include him, lo, then he would not be allowed to continue his personal learning at the time of the Torah reading. V'hocha mayri shehoyu shom asora belohu, and here that Rav Sheshes did turn away to continue his Torah learnings because there were in fact 10 others without counting him. The Ode Tirates Ho'alfasi, another approach that the Rif gives. Shiny Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes is different. In other words, there is everyone else and there's Rav Sheshes. He had this privilege, if you will, because his entire preoccupation was Torah. Umnaso literally is someone's craft or art. His art, his craft was Torah study. In other words, he was totally consumed by Torah study all of the time, all of his waking hours. So he had this privilege. The Kosav, the Rif writes, Va'anan mistaber lon ki hai tirutza. He likes this particular, this is the more likely explanation of Rav Sheshes' behavior. Shnayim mikro viecho targum. We learned in our Gemara at the very bottom of the page, the bottom of this omid, that one is to read the Torah portion twice in the original text, the Hebrew, and one with the Aramaic targum, with the Aramaic explanation. In this Tosfos, we have numbered 1 and 2. You'll see there are two approaches to the topic of reading the Torah in a translation. So for being that we are English speakers, we would say reading an English translation in lieu of the Targum, in lieu of the Aramaic commentary, often referred to as the Targum Unklus. Yesh Meforshim, there are those that say, V'hu hadin l'loy azos belaz shelohen, that foreign speakers, foreign tongues, meaning other than Hebrew, other than original Hebrew text, there are those that say that, like the Targum one, they could use a translation that appears in their language. That the lo azos belaz shelohen have kamo Targum she mifaresh lifamim. The foreign translation is like the Targum, which explains at times. Ki kamo sha Targum mifaresh la'am ha'oretz, just like the Targum elucidates or makes clear to the uninformed, to the am ha'oretz, the ignoramus, and here he's ignorant of the Hebrew. Kach heim mevinim mitoch halaz, so to they, the foreign tongues, will understand through their translation. So that this first approach is viewing the Targum Unklus, or the Targum that the Torah speaks about, as a means of making it understandable to the public, basically in a translation sense. And the first approach is saying that is sufficient. However, Tosfos does not accept that. Veloi nihira. It doesn't appear to Tosfos that would be acceptable. Sharei hatargum meforesh bema she'ein lilmoid min ha'ivri. The targum goes beyond a translation. It goes beyond that which would be understood by a simple translation. Kida'ashkichon bekama duchti, as we find in a number of places throughout the Gemara, the Omer of Yosef, ilmoli targumo the high krolo yodano my komar. If not for the targum, by reading the Hebrew and translating it, I wouldn't know what it's talking about. So that this approach is saying that the targum goes beyond a mere translation. It in fact reveals information without which, namely by translating alone, I would never have known. Al kein ein lomar b'shun loshen pam shlishis ki im b'loshen targum. Therefore, the third reading shall not be done in any language, namely not in any translation. Rather, b'loshen targum. One must use for his third reading the targum. As far as the this Tosus is concerned, there still is room for further analysis. This insistence upon the Targum, is it based on an assumption that he who is reading the Targum, even though he might be a foreign speaker, he happens to understand the Targum that he is reading as well, and therefore by reading the Targum that he understands, he will be learning the Torah portion with those things that are revealed only by the Targum and understanding it as well. It may be that this insistence upon reading the Targum could possibly be implied by this Tosus, that if you're a foreign speaker and that's the only language you understand, so that in addition to reading the Torah, you would read the Targum even though you are not necessarily understanding the Targum. Just like there's an assumption that you're not necessarily understanding the Hebrew, and that's why and one might have thought that's why he's reading the Targum, but if you're talking about someone who's a foreign speaker and doesn't understand the Hebrew, he may not understand the Targum as well, but is expected to read the Targum anyway. That is a matter of discussion that goes beyond the purview of our shiur. The next Tosfos deals with the reading of Atros and Divon, even though there is no Targum on it. So what is the expectation over here? V'afilu Atros v'Divon, these were place names. Pirush Rashi, afilu atros v'divon, she'ein bo targum. You are to read these psukim having names in it, names in this case names of places, that has no targum on it. Shitzorch l'kroisa shloisha pa'amim be'ivri. You have to read it three times in the original. So, according to Rashi, the goal is to read it three times. Bekoshe, am I knock out Atros v'Divon? Why does the Gemara use this as its example? Sheyesh lo mikomokom targum Yerushalmi. There happens to be another Aramaic commentary on these psukim. True, there is no unklus, which is the famous and formal targum on the Torah. But there is another Targum called the Targum Yerushalmi. Therefore, the point is like Rashi, that it's simply an insistence on reading something in the original three times, Hoyolo Loma Ruvein v'Shimon. They should have cited as an example psukim that have the names of the tribes in it, Oy psuko achrina, or some other pasuk, She'ein bo Targum klal, that has no Targum whatsoever. So as far as Tosus's question is concerned, why is it that the Gemara chose as its example the case of Atros v'Divon? V'yesh lomar, mishum hachi nokat Atros v'Divon. Tosus understands that the reason for choosing the Atros v'Divon example is afagav she'en bo targum yodua, Elo Targum Yerushalmi, even though it doesn't have the famous, the well-known Targum, the Targum Unklus. In the case of Unklus, he just reads the name, he presents the names as they are in the original. The Targum Yerushalmi elaborates when you get to this particular pasuk. V'tzorich likrois shloisha pomim ha'ivri mikomokum yosir toiv likrois pam shlishis ba'targum. The Marsha explains this line of Tosfos as saying that if you didn't have the alternative Targum, namely the Targum Yerushalmi, if you didn't have that, so you would read it three times in the original. However, knowing that we have this secondary Targum, this alternative Targum, the Targum Yerushalmi, the third reading should be using the Targum Yerushalmi. it would then come out that there is a machlokis Rashi and Tosfos regarding Atros V'Divon. According to Rashi, since there's no formal Targum Unklus, just read the original a third time. According to Tosfos, since there is an alternative Targum, it's preferable for the third reading to read that particular Targum, in this case the Targum Yerushalmi. It was mentioned in our Gemara that Rav Bevi had in mind to do all of the parshios on Erev Yom Kippur. The Gemara rejected that by saying, how can you use Erev Yom Kippur for that when you're expected to eat and drink during that day? Ki'ilu hisane misane chi vasiri. Hochi pirusho. The idea of being considered to have fasted on the ninth, it is as if to say that had we been commanded to fast on the ninth, so your eating and drinking would be a fulfillment of that commandment had it existed. The Hiksha Rabbeinu Shmuel bar Aaron mi Yanvil, my kashiole. What is the hava mina of this source, of this Tanaic source that you will notice in the upper part of our Daf Chesomet Beis, which thought to say that that there would be fasting on the ninth? After all, the source did say, after citing the pasuk V'nisa Mesav Shesechem B'Tisha L'Chodesh Bo'erev, that could one think that one would be fasting on the ninth? Isn't fasting on the tenth? Tosfos is asking, how would you have thought there is fasting on the ninth in the first place? V'hoksiv, we have another pasuk in a different context. It's a Pesach related pasuk, and it says, "Bo rishon b'arba sor yoyim lachodesh bo erev toichlu matzos." It says there on the 14th. Of the month in the evening, you shall eat matzahs. Now, the 14th of Nisan is Erev Pesach. It's not the time we eat matzahs. The Oisoi Erev, Ritzon Olomar Erev, Shel Tezvav. In the Posuk Tosuk just cited, Erev means the evening of the 15th. In other words, you finished the 14th of Nisan, you finished the daytime hours, and now entered the evening. That's called the evening of the 15th. And it's very clear that you're eating matzis at that night period. Hachanami, so in the same spirit of things, Neymar, say here regarding the Erev Yom Kippur Pasuk, my Erev Shel Asiri. So that the Pasuk says, V'inisem es nafshosechem b'tisha l'chodesh b'erev, means you shall start your fasting in the evening following the ninth of Tishrei. And that happens to be what we do. So the question is, what is the Havamina that you would be fasting on the ninth? Where did that Havamina come from? Just like in the case of Pesach, it's very clear that Bo'erev directs you to the night following the day, the 14th. So too, the word Bo'erev here should direct you to the night following the ninth of Tishrei, which in fact is the beginning of Yom Kippur. The Yesh Loimar, the Shiny Hossam, by very careful reading of the Pesach Pasuk and the Matzis, you'll see it is different. Dichtiv, in the Pesach Pasuk that Pesach just quoted, Tochlu, Dichtiv, Tochlu Lebesoif. The word Tochlu appears at the end. In other words, following the word Bo'erev, it then says Tochlu Matzos. Demashma Hochi, the understanding of the Pasuk is thusly, Bo Rishon B'Yudalid Balayla Tochlu Matzos. The first day of Pesach, the 14th at night, that's the night following the 14th, eat matzahs. So being that the tochlu word appears at the end, then it makes it clear that the eating is taking place in the evening following the 14th. Reading once again the line we just saw in the Tosfos, Demash Mahochi, Bo Rishon B'Yudalid Balayla Tochlu Matzos, Aval Hochak Si V'Nisem. Here in Yom Kippur, the word V'Nisem, which has to do with fasting, Koidem Bo'erev, it appears before the word Bo'erev. Demashma, that it would, this implies, v'nisem miyad biyom hachi, that you shall fast immediately on the ninth day. So that the verb in the case of Yom Kippur appears before the date. So you would have verb meaning v'nisem on the ninth. In the case of Pesach, the verb follows the reference to night. Therefore, in the case of Pesach, we see a reference to night, night of the 14th, and then eat. The Tosfos, Yashlim Parshiosov im Hatzibur. Nireh, the Chol HaShavua, regarding the mitzvah of Shnayim Mikro V'Yechot Targum, it appears that the entire week, Mikavon demaschilin likros haparsha, from the point in time that the new week's Torah portion is started, dainu mi minchas Shabbos v'eilech ad Shabbos haba, namely from mincha of Shabbos till the next Shabbos, nikres im hatzibur. That is a fulfillment of the idea of im hatzibur. The afagav dilinin gitin lo nikro kami Shabbos, even though regarding laws and conditions written into a divorce document, the entire week is not called before Shabbos. Elo meirvi v'elech, rather the idea of before Shabbos, prior to Shabbos is from Wednesday onwards. With regard to the Torah reading, the entire week is called starting from Shabbos afternoon when the new Torah portion is started. From that point on is called before the next Shabbos. The Maharitz Chius challenges the next couple of words as being part of the text of the Tosfos. Hence, we will continue on the next line, B'medrash Yesh, Gimel Dvarim, Tzivor Rabbeinu HaKadosh Levonov, B'shoah Sheniftar. There were three things that Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, known as Rabbeinu HaKadosh, instructed his sons prior to his death. And one of those was Shelo Tochlu Lechem B'Shabbos Ad Shetigmru Kol HaParsha, that one should not eat his Shabbos meal until he finishes the requirement of Shnayim Mikra, of reading the Parsha. Mashma de Koidim Achilot Tzorach Lashlimo. It would come out from here that one must finish the Torah, the Shnayim Mikra requirement before his Shabbos meal. However, if one didn't finish it before his meal, but finished his Shnayim Mikra after the meal, it's okay. Mikol Mokoim, Mitzvah Mina Muvchor Koidem Achilo. However, the preferable way is before one's Shabbos meal. The Tosfos Loi Le'olam Lailahu. In our Gemara, we had learned a Tanaic source, which seemed to indicate initially a contradiction between the classification of the time considered immediately after Alois HaShachar, immediately after dawn. The Gemara's conclusion, though, had been that the Achar Amud HaShachar is really nighttime. Our Tosfos continues, Tema, Im Kain, if it is so that immediately after Amud HaShachar is considered nighttime, then as far as the Braisa is concerned, which tried to teach us a situation of a double Kriya Shema reading, thereby fulfilling a nighttime and morning time requirement, couldn't the Braisa have told us a bigger Chiddush? Lema Rabusa, it could have told us a Rabusa greater Chiddush. Shepo'omim yesh odam kore li'achar shiyale amud hashachar, shnei po'omim, v'yotze bo mishum shachris u'mishum arvis. In other words, instead of teaching us that there are times a person reads twice at night, you could have said that a person reads twice, we should point out, twice at night, one before and one after Amud HaShachar. You could have said a person reads twice after Amud HaShachar, realizing that it's categorized as night. So you have two Kriya Shema readings at the same point in time or period of time, namely after Amud HaShachar. And with that, he would be Yotze, a morning reading, because there are people that get up, and a night Kriya Shema, because it's still considered Laila. That, of course, would have been a bigger Chiddush than that which we are being taught in the Gemara. V'yesh lomar. So Tosfos answers, Dehochi ka'omar. When the Gemara says that immediately after dawn is considered night, it says, it means thusly, L'oilom lailahu b'sha'ar mitzvahs. That point right after dawn is considered night regarding other mitzvahs, the bo'ina b'hu yoyim, other mitzvahs that have a daytime requirement, kamo tefillin v'tzitzis. Those are mitzvahs that require daytime. Aval gabi kriyashma. But as far as a kriyashma after dawn, loy, that would not be considered a fulfillment of the nighttime kriyashma. Hoyo v'iko inshi dekaimi bahi shaito lavzman shchibahu, since people are arising from their sleep at that point, namely post-dawn, right after dawn break, it cannot be considered the time of Shiva. And nighttime Kriyashma requires u'bishochbecha, time of sleeping. So it may be, in fact, considered night, but it's not considered a time for a nighttime Kriyashma, because nighttime Kriyashma is dependent on another factor, namely Shiva. V'hai denokat la'achar shi'alu ya'al amud ha'shachar, the timing of after break of dawn, lav dafka miyad, it doesn't mean immediately after break of dawn for the daytime kriyashma fulfillment. Lav dafka miyad hu, it can't be that. The hotzorach lahamtin lo chol apochos shi'ur demasnisin, you have to wait for the morning kriyashma at least a point till a point in time that the Mishnah dictates, ad shi'akir bein tcheles lekarsi. Or other Girsos have Ad Bein Tcheles Lelavon, that one would have to wait until there's enough light to distinguish between blue and green or blue and white. There are different opinions in the Mishnah, but those are points in time which are not immediately after the break of dawn, but a little bit later. We continue with the Tosfos at the top of Daf Tes Omed Aleph. This was part of the Gemara that we had learned in our Shiur today. And this conclusion was with regard to the second Brisa regarding the two points in time, one before sunrise and one after sunrise. What is that considered? The Gemara concluded that that is considered day. Namely, even before sunrise is nevertheless considered day. Tosfos here opens with a very similar question as we saw in the previous Tosfos at the bottom of Ches Omid Beis, Dibur Hamaschil Veloi. Tosfos says, "V'im Toimar, if it is so that the period of time right before sunrise is in fact considered daytime, so then Lisni Shtei Pe'omim." The source could have taught that one would read Kriya Shema twice, Kodem Honeitz HaChamo, twice before sunrise, and thereby fulfill a nighttime requirement as well as a daytime requirement. V'havei Rabusa Tfei, and this would have a bigger chiddush than that which we were taught. We were taught that reading twice, once before and once after sunrise, you fulfill both Kriya Shemas. Here, you could tell me you have both readings before sunrise. De'afilu kodem ha'netz ha'vizman de'kriyas shema shel shachris. That even before netz, since the Gemara concluded that it is considered daytime, you would be fulfilling even before netz the morning Kriya Shema. As opposed to what the source does say, it says if you read it after netz, that is a fulfillment of morning Kriya Shema. So why doesn't it teach this? Why doesn't it teach two readings before Nates, and you have the double fulfillment? V'yesh loimar kide parishna. We will answer this question as we answered on Daf Ches Amud Beis in the Tosfos there, the Ramasa Veloi, Tahai Yemomo, that which the Gemara concludes that it is considered daytime before sunrise. That is true, the Inyan Sha'ar mitzvahs, regarding other kinds of mitzvahs. Other mitzvahs we had, for example, Tefillin and Tzitzis, which require daytime. You are in fulfillment of that requirement even before sunrise. Avol inyan kriyashma hayoviko inshi deganu, regarding kriyashma, since there are people that are still sleeping, ganu is sleeping before sunrise, lav zman kimohu, it doesn't fulfill the daytime requirement of uvekumecha that is in the kriyashma. So it's not the time of uvekumecha. Vetema. A question is raised. The kashya de Rabbi Akiva ad Rabbi Akiva. We seem to have a contradiction in Rabbi Akiva's. The Hocha Ka'omar, here he says, Achar Honetz is the Zman of Kriyashma of Shachris. Ulekamon Ka'omar, and later on Omid Beis, he says, Mishiyakir Bein Chamor La'orud. If there is enough light to recognize between a donkey, a chamor, and an orud, might very well be a wild donkey. It's an animal that is very similar to a chamor. If there is enough light, then you have reached the time for morning kriyashma. Dehainu afilu koidem. That is a point in time. That light level actually is achieved before sunrise. So, with regard to the zman of kriyashma shel shachris, over here, Rabbi Akiva is saying that is after Neitz HaChama. Later on Omid Beis, of Tes Omid Beis, we see Rabbi Akiva giving a time even before Neitz HaChama for morning kriyashma. So to answer this, number one, the Yesh Lamar Detrei Tanoi Alibo de Rabbi Akiva. We're not witnessing a contradiction, but rather two later Tanaic versions as to what Rabbi Akiva's opinion is in fact. Inami, Yesh Lomar, another approach to this is as follows. Yomomahu Afilu Gabi Kriyashma. The time before Nates is in fact, yes, a time for daytime Kriyashma. Dozman Kimahu. It is the time of arising, and hence it is a time called Uvekumecha. Now, if that's the case, so what about our original question? The ha delo nokat shnei pomim koidim honetz, that which the source did not give us what we termed above would have been the bigger chiddush. Why not tell us that you could read twice before sunrise and have a double fulfillment, namely of and fulfill nighttime and daytime? Mishum, the reason the source didn't teach that when in fact it could have is because the boy lashminen she'eno yoytze b'shel laylo achar hanetz. It wanted to communicate this point that you don't fulfill the nighttime reading after Nates. Therefore, it was important for the source to feature the time of after Nates to get that point across, that nighttime Kriyashma cannot be fulfilled after Nates, but not to exclude the possibility of daytime Kriyashma being fulfilled, in fact, before Nates. And that before Nates is the same then as what Rabbi Akiva said, Bein Chamor Li'orod. Hence, no contradiction whatsoever. The next Tosfos also goes on that which we learned at the very end of our Gemara Shir today, and that is that if you are reading the nighttime Kriyashma rather late, if you will, you should not say Hashkivenu. Rashi said that Rabbi Zera's halacha of Uvavashel Hashkivenu was going on the Tanaic source number one, the previous source, which spoke about the double reading, one before Alos and one after Alos. And when you read before Alos, before dawn, and you will fulfill your nighttime Kriyashma, so Rashi said, regarding that, don't say Hashkivenu. because, and we learned the Rashi in our Gemara Shir today, because that is not a time that is that is appropriate to say, Almighty Hashkivenu, enable us to go to sleep. That's not the time of going to sleep. It's a time of the end of sleep. So now we read the Tosfos, Pirush Bekuntres, the Rashi explanation, Amilsa to Rav Shimon Choy, is that this ruling of Rabbi Zera, do not say Hashkivenu, is going on Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's teaching, the Korei Koidem Shial Amud HaShachar Koi, of the reading of pre-Amud HaShachar, pre-dawn, and fulfilling nighttime Kriyashma. And as we said, Rashi said, that point in time, it is not appropriate to recite the Hashkivenu Brocha. The Nira Li, Tosfos, though, disagrees. It says, the Ozvadai Zman Shrivahu, that is definitely the time of sleeping, Umotzi Lemeimar Hashkivenu, and the term Hashkivenu is appropriate for that point in time. So he disagrees with Rashi's analysis, as far as the word is concerned, V'od, and a further objection, If like Rashi, the Havi lay lemeimar a my desolik mine, then Rabbi Zero's point, if Rashi's pshat is correct, then Rabbi Zero's ruling should have been attached in the Gemara to the first source, following the first source which spoke about before and after dawn. Then Rabbi Zero's comment should have appeared, but it didn't. It appeared here, later, after the second source was featured. Upirish Hasar Mikutzi. Dekoi Akoidim Honetz. Desolik Mine. Rabbi Zero's ruling is going on the second Tanaic source, which spoke about a double reading of creation, one before the sunrise and one after the sunrise, and the pre-sunrise reading, the Kodem Hanetz, you will fulfill the nighttime Kriya Shema. So that Rabbi Zera is going on that, the Kodem Hanetz, the Solik Mine, which is the point that was just finished in the Gemara. The Gemara is coming, Solik Mine, is coming off of that case of Kodem and Achar Hanetz. And that's the reason one should not say Hashkivenu. The lav zman shivahu. It is not the time of sleeping. Kevan sha'olo kvar amud hashachar, since dawn has already arrived, afilu kodam onetz, even before nates, is not a time of sleeping whatsoever. So, as a result of that, you can't. It's not appropriate to read the paragraph of Hashkivenu. What's interesting to note, though, with regard to the Sar Mikutzis Pshat, in so far as Kodem Honetz is not a Zman Shriva with regard to Hashkivenu, and yet, we shouldn't forget, you are going to fulfill the nighttime Kriya Shema according to this second Lashon, because it is called, it's still, since, as the Gemara said, since there are people that are still sleeping, it's called U'Bishachvicha. So it's a very, very fine line that needs further analysis regarding the Sar Mikutzis Pshat, that with regard to Hashkivenu Kodem Honetz, Tosfos says is lav zman shiva, but yet with regard to your basic Kriya Shema requirement, you are fulfilling your nighttime Kriya Shema requirement, which is governed by the Torah word uvishachbecha. So apparently there is a difference between the term hashkivenu and uvishachbecha regarding that point in time called Kodem Anetz Hachama. But as we said, that requires further analysis. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.